Today is Friday, April 12th, 2024, and you're listening to the Ask a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Nate. Today, we have an update about the Canadian multi-organ genitalia, because that's what you want from an Ask a Christian podcast. Anyways, we hopefully won't have to deal with this anymore for a while, because we have a resolution. So stay tuned for that. The court has decided. We do a topic about a prayer study where it's just a bunch of fallacious information saying prayer doesn't work to be countered by studies saying prayer does work. So we talk about prayer studies and what kind of metrics they use, what kind of metrics they should use, what kind of people volunteer for these things, what kind of clergy people. There's just a whole lot. And what does the Bible actually say about this stuff? Then we talk about 1 Corinthians 5:13. And someone mentions like a bunch of indiscretions in the church and over the history and how certain church institutions will try to hide it under a rug and sweep over it and cover it up versus what the Bible says, which is put the evil among you out, like get rid of the evil person, 1 Corinthians 5:13. So it's like if you were trying to do the godly advice and the biblical advice, you would shine a spotlight on whatever evil has erupted in your church or institute and get those people out. Cut them out like cancer. Instead, if you try to sweep it under the rug, it's first of all, it's going to be exposed anyway. And when it is, it's going to be way worse for you. You'll just have to see this podcast to see who we're talking about. Maybe you have a guess. Then we talk about different resurrection accounts. And it's like, man, they say the Bible is the living word of God because every time you read it, you can get different meanings. Always, every time this question comes up and it's like, you know, the different accounts in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, of the resurrection, it's like, look, in the beginning of the morning, Mary and some people went with her, and in one account, it's an angel, in another account, it's a man in a dazzling robe. Gee, who could that be? It's an angel. And in another account, there's two men, also angels. So the problem here is one versus two. And is this just a matter of perception or perspective, which I think. But then, well, isn't every single word recorded in the Bible have to be 100% accurate? Well, it is 100% accurate according to this perspective. So when you have, you know, something like, you know, hundreds of people see Jesus rise up into the sky, it's like, wow, they all have the same exact perspective. When it's something about a man, an angel, a man-angel, and you're getting, you know, perspectives of different people, does it really matter that one may say two, one may say one? Is it an amalgamation of the accounts to give the whole story and sort out information where you will? Anyways, it's something new I just read today. I've read this account tons of times. But on one account where it says, well, one says the stone was rolled away already, and one says that an angel rolled the stone away. So one, did this happen in the same linear time? But another thought I had, which turns out Father Chris agrees with. But just by reading it, another meaning jumped out. And it's like, well, look, an angel could come, roll away the stone, and peace out. He goes away. And then women go in, and there you go, another angel talking to him. Maybe even two angels. So anyway, like I said earlier, which I will now reiterate, there is no shortage of perfectly acceptable explanations for any perceived contradiction in the Bible or whatever. But the question is, are they true? Which one is accurate? So the point is, there's a plethora of ones that are completely fine, so there's no contradiction whatsoever. But is that what accurately happened? Well, surely one of them is. That's the point. So it's like everything else. Like, are you going to quibble over two or three perfectly acceptable hypotheses on where atheists would say or non-religious people would say, this is a contradiction of the Bible? Well, why would we take your hypothesis for it instead of going with one of these other hypotheses that are not a contradiction? So all things being equal, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The people who compiled the Bible certainly had an understanding that was not contradictory. Otherwise, why would they put it in the Bible? Or why wouldn't they put a disclaimer? Or why wouldn't they have done any number of other things? So the fact that the Bible is the way it is shows, I believe, these people clearly know what they're doing. So when they put perceived contradictions in the Bible, well, they didn't think that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that. Anyways, regardless, I digress. You'll hear more later. So, this is the best one. Oh my gosh, I got to clip this out. Okay, so a dishonest atheist gets owned by a fellow atheist. So, Oh my gosh, this guy is just a headache. Like, he's a nice guy, but man, it's just, he's deceptive, and oh gosh, don't want to say too many bad things about him because he's not here. He was there, but he's not here. But man, it's just, you could just see the deception and dishonesty in these tactics he uses. Like, one of the ones you'll get to is about, you know, did Jesus' parents know he was going to be great? And like, yes, the angel says that, you know, behold, Mary, the Lord is, you know, has favor upon you, you're highly favored, and, you know, you'll give birth to, you know, to a son, and you will call his name Emmanuel, meaning God with us, and all this greatness and favor. So of course they know he's going to be great. The angel told them he's going to be great. And then he's like, well, what about in Luke, is it 15 or 22, where Jesus was in the temple and he's, I think, like 12 or something. And his parents said, were looking for him, and they finally find him and said, why did you do this to me? And he says, did you not know I would be in my father's house? He's like, see, they didn't know it'd be great. I'm like, you are kidding me. That is the most, like, ignorant, dishonest, infuriating thing you possibly could have done about this. Like, anyways, I will digress again. But the point is, no, like, the angel telling Mary and Joseph Jesus is going to be great has nothing to do with them not knowing he was in the temple. Like, they didn't know he's in the temple, therefore they didn't know he was going to be great. That is, you can't possibly, like, torture the scripture any more than to come up with some kind of meaning like that. Anyway, but then this guy goes on, like, a philosophical rant and tries to, like, own these other Christians about, goodness, presuppositional apologetics. Thankfully, we don't dip our toe too much in the water, but this guy tries to, like, own them, starts throwing around words, and starts saying things that didn't quite add up, so a fellow atheist of his calls him out on it, and turns out he doesn't know the words he's saying. He was just trying to use big words to get by in the Christians, but the Christians are familiar with it, and the other atheists are familiar with it, and I'm sort of familiar with it because it happens all the time, and I have to sit and endure this discussion all the time. Anyway, but this guy is not familiar with it, so he gets called out, and it's kind of like right where you have that hammer of justice that you can just clobber them with. I try to show a little mercy because I think that's the Christian thing to do. And it's like, you know, when they walk right up on the edge of, oh, crap, I stuck my foot in my mouth. Oh, this is going to be bad. Oh, these guys are going to let me have it. I'm so embarrassed and ashamed. Hopefully that's what they feel. Hopefully not proud about it. But anyways, it's like, wait, so you did this and you did this. It's like, oh, they're going to clobber me. And it's like, okay, well, I understand, you know, but maybe in the future, you know, maybe don't try to, like, show Christians how dumb they are when you don't know what you're talking about. Does that sound good? Does that sound right? Maybe you should just repent and believe the gospel. Okay, anyways. Man, good thing it's the weekend. I'm kind of worked up. All right. Happy Friday. Have an awesome day. Enjoy this podcast. It's a pretty good one. Why do I always do that? It's the most amazing podcast you'll ever hear in your life. There you go. See you later.
All right. I was determined to have a Christian topic today because we've been talking about politics way too much. but I guess we can't help ourselves, right? So I go to the Christian news. And what do I see? Politics. So there's something else that kind of ties into this. I just, while I wait for all of you people to, I guess, have your breakfast or, you know, bathe your chinchillas in dust or whatever. Okay, so we've recently been talking to our atheist Canadian friend, Michael, who's as recently as yesterday, right? And the story in the news is, okay, this Canadian person, says they're trans or something, says they're something. It may not be trans. It's like male 2.5 or something, because they are a dude with a penis, but they want the government to pay for a vagina while keeping their penis. So they're trying to turn into like a hermaphrodite or something. They're trying to turn into something with both utilities. Anyway, so the point was, we were talking about yesterday in our political chat about, you know, socialized Canadian medicine and blah, 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 and how, you know, it's all free and blah, 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 but it's not, because my wife is in healthcare and she's constantly telling me about all these Canadian people who are coming down here and buying their own insurance in America to pay for surgeries and procedures that are like preventing death, like heart issues and like serious medical issues. That they would die because the amount of time they were given in Canada. So they're like, hey, we can do this surgery, but it's going to take X amount of time. And they're like, well, we're going to be dead. So they have to flee to America to pay out of pocket anyways and get these life-saving procedures. So I'm like, but look, this person is having this totally elective gender extra assignment surgery to get both organs or both genitalia, whatever. And the government's going to pay for that. And yesterday this happened. So it's fortuitous that I see this article today. So he's like, well, we don't know that. We'll just have to see how it goes. I'm like, yeah, I guess we'll have to see how it votes. Well, this morning, apparently we see how it votes. So the Canadian, the court rules in a 3-0. Wow. 3-0 vote. Ontario's divisional court ruled that they must use publicly funded insurance, so taxpayer dollars, when people can't get like heart surgeries regarding their heart and other stuff that they need to keep living. They have to be on a wait list that prevents them from getting that in time that they would die. So they have to flee to foreign lands to get these procedures, while this thing gets to use government funded money for a totally elective surgery. So there you go. I guess, score one more for AAC conservatism and sorry, Canada. Okay. Anyway, so I guess there you go. All right. CEO, it's too bad we missed him. But I know he was going to bring up another verse. He wanted, and I don't know, man. Like, this is the thing, right? Like, I don't care. We can't get away from the Skittles conversations. It's like 0.0% of the world population, but it's like 99% everything everyone talks about. So to say they're invisible people or underrepresented, shut up. You're everywhere. So anyway, the point is, someone will bring up occasionally like Deuteronomy 22:5, where it talks about, you know, man shall not wear woman's clothes and things like that. And they're like, see, it's anti-transverse. The Bible knew this. I'm like, no, it doesn't. I mean, for a normal person, yes, it does. But from these people's kind of like warped understanding, it doesn't apply, right? So if you're going to try to witness to people and, you know, be a light, at least, you know, do some work to realize their perspective, because otherwise it doesn't mean, like, you know, technically you're right. Sure. The Christian is right. But you're also not, it's like throwing, you know, talking to a brick wall, unless you meet them on their level of their kind of, it's like we tell non-Christians, right? Look, you don't have to believe Christianity. You should, but you don't have to understand how we view it. So same thing. You don't have to believe the Skittles nonsense to understand how they view it. So CEO, glad you're back. I was talking about Deuteronomy 22:5. So even though a normal person would read that and say, a man thinks he's a woman, wears women's clothes. Well, see, the Bible says that. Well, first of all, they're not Israelites. That was an Israelite law. But second of all, these people's understanding, they would say, well, look, though, if I took your Bible verse, I'm a dude, big hairy dude, but I say I'm a woman. So it would be against that law to wear man's clothes, because even though you say I look like a man, because you're a man, but even though you say I look like a man, I'm really a woman. So by me wearing a dress and makeup, I'm really following that verse, because I'm a woman wearing woman's clothes. So even though it's completely turning the world upside down and we live in a clown world, that's how they view it in their perspective. So that verse doesn't work on them, right? Just like the homosexuality verses, assuming that, you know, they're hooking up with a partner of some sort of biological sex and there's some biological sex. If it's like what you would observe rightly and clearly as like two dudes, like, no, that verse doesn't apply because you say I'm a man, but I'm really a woman. So it would be against that law if I hooked up with a woman, because that would make me a lesbian. It's like a 400-pound bearded lesbian. Yes, exactly. Anyway, so... gosh, why do we have to keep talking about this? CEO, do you want to say anything else before we try to run and scream and move on?
It's good that you're making peace with your ontology.
And mute and block and ban. Yes, CEO, go ahead.
So when you're talking about the Canadian law, it kind of just made me want to leave the room for a second. Sorry. It's just.
Yeah, me too.
So I prefer we move on from the topic.
We were talking about your Deuteronomy 22 verse.
Oh, I know, I appreciate it, but the Canadian earlier part, I just want to move on, sorry.
Yeah, we moved on to your Deuteronomy 22 verse. Okay, wait, we got another one. Okay, fine. We got another topic. Okay, let's see. Christian school. I've never read this before. We're going to be in this together. Hang on.
Oh, is this the autism?
I'm bad at making notes. Yeah, so clearly you know what it says because you read this for your morning newspaper. All right, so I'm going to click on this. It says, Christian school faces backlash after canceling Demonic Autism Week. All right, Chris, what am I in store for in this? Are they calling autism people demons, or are they getting demons out of autistic people? What's the thing here?
It's the I'll give you two guesses as to what kind of church and school this is.
Okay, I haven't read it yet. All I see is the logo. So it's like a A-frame roof church with like a blue, let's see, TCI. That doesn't mean anything to me. Okay, I'm just going to say Lutheran. Am I right? Is it some kind of Lutheran church?
No.
Okay, wait, another guess. Okay, it's the other kind of Presby church.
No.
Oh, okay, hang on, one more. Okay,
I'm going to guess that they are going to say Autism Week is demonic.
Well, yeah, probably, but we're trying to find the type of church this is first. Oh, man, okay.
What is the only type of church that would teach that?
Evangelical?
No, be more specific.
Okay, so Pentecostal is not evangelical, right? Or are you saying that is a branch?
Pentecostals are under the umbrella of evangelical.
Okay,
yes,
I don't know.
It is a Pentecostal church where the pastor is teaching that, you know, autism is a spirit that must be cast out of children.
Okay, so kind of like Pray the Gay Away, except demonic and more extreme.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, they're not shocking them. Do they shock them in the Pray the Gay Away stuff? They didn't do that, right? They just, like, prayed the gay. They didn't try to shock the gay away?
No.
Okay. See, modern science tries to shock, modern, like, early 1900s, mid-1900s science. Modern science back then tried to shock people into right living, but somehow praying.
Yeah, all the scientists agreed about it, too. Oh.
Ah, that was a consensus. Michael, real quick, CEO, cover yours for a second. Michael, so we did get some resolution to what we talked about just yesterday about the CEO, this is hurting his soul, so we got to move on. I'll just do a victory lap in graciousness, and then we'll move on. But the person who we said, you know, Canada was denying healthcare or putting them on a waiting list so they had to come here for surgeries because people like the trans person that wanted both sex organs was getting it paid for. And you're like, well, that didn't happen yet. And I'm like, okay, fine. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Well, we saw what happens. So the article today is that it was voted by the Ontario Division Court 3-0 that, yes, the Canadian government will use their healthcare funds to pay for this totally elective surgery. So anyways, there's an update, but we can move on because CEO he already left the room once. We can't have that again.
Okay.
Michael,
so
did you get,
just so you're aware, first things first, electroconvulsive therapy is still used in certain situations and it's been found to be very advantageous in some cases.
But praying is bad. Okay.
Could we shock the atheism out of you?
Well, hey. Electroconvulsive therapy is a science. And prayer is pseudoscience. So therein lies the difference.
So we could, we could shock the atheists out of you.
So the Templeton Foundation about 10 years ago actually did a study on the efficacy of intercessory prayer. You can look it up. The Templeton Foundation is a weirdly religious foundation that, grants money called the Templeton Prize every year, to basically to someone who's ready to say something nice about religious people. And you like somebody in the sciences who's ready to say something nice about religious people. So they conducted a double-blind study where they had people who were, I think it was 140 or 150 people who were all going to undergo some type of cardiac procedure. And they enlisted, I think it was 25 churches all over the country. They had the person only give the individual's first name and last initial, so to try to keep it as anonymous as possible. It's a true double-blind study, so they had people who received prayers and knew about it, people who received prayers and didn't know about it, and people who didn't receive any prayers at all within the same group of people. And the study showed conclusively at the end that the people who received prayers and knew about it had more complications than any other group. The second group that had the most complications were people who received prayers and didn't know about it. So, yeah, just miss me with this prayer work stuff.
Hold on.
Scientifically not response. Can I give a scientific response, please?
Hold that for me to just give a practical response real quick, because we got off base. So you guys can take it wherever you want in a second, but just to correct the record, I was talking about the pain harm stuff related to it. So my thought is, hey, brother, the Bible says homosexuality is a sin. Let's say a prayer for you. Oh, it didn't work? No problem. I'm not hurt at all. Versus, you know, hey, you know, non-religious person, let's shock you. And if we hit you, you know, just a millimeter wrong, you could be paralyzed for life. You know, I was talking potential risk versus reward. But then also one more thing. I wanted to ask, you can tell us later, if you got your electric car hooked up and maybe you got the atheism shocked out of you yesterday. But also, yeah, go ahead, CEO, with your scientific point, and then Chris wanted to say something.
So Michael, as focused on science as you are, and I admire that, I'm a little surprised by you taking the validity of the study when I think you probably remember from statistics class, you need to have at least 300 participants in each group for it to be considered any level of meaningfully valid. So if you're saying this had 140 participants, I hope it was at least in each group. If you're telling me it was 140 total, it's below nothing. So just help me understand this.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up. But so the study was conducted by the Templeton Foundation, not by anybody else. It was conducted by the religious group. So I'd have to look up to see how many people it actually was. But Nate, something else that you're and I wouldn't expect you, I don't want to come across the wrong way, I wouldn't expect you to know about this, but before electroconvulsive therapy is administered, the person is sedated into something called twilight sedation. So the person is essentially asleep before it happens. So there's actually no pain felt. So what you see in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's not what actually happens.
Sure,
but
whatever.
It used to happen.
Yeah, like, crap, and what was the other thing? Oh my gosh, maybe I need shock therapy to, like, keep my brain channels and pathway open so I don't forget in between these conversations. The Templeton Foundation was that what you said? I was just going to say, since I have no knowledge of what this organization is whatsoever, side note, just proves that we are not all a monolith, because I have no idea who these people are. Okay, Chris, what do you want to say?
Okay.
And it sounds like Michael is in your diner, so maybe look over and you guys can see each other.
That'd be great. I'd love to go to a diner with Michael, as long as they didn't have poutine. Got to throw a Canadian insult in there. But so the other problem with this study is that in the Christian worldview teaches that God only answers the prayers of the elect. He does not answer anyone else's prayers. His only answer is repent and believe to anybody who's praying to him about anything if they're an unbeliever. And so within the Christian worldview, it is impossible to know who the elect are. Therefore, there is absolutely no scientific study that could possibly be done to measure the effect of prayer, because you don't know who the elect are. So you can't even start by creating a group of elect and a control group of non-elect, because that's not possible within the Christian worldview. So the test, whoever was administering this test was a moron, and whoever was authorizing this test knew nothing about Christianity. And so it's not really, if you were talking about a Hindu prayer test, great. But it doesn't comport with the Christian worldview in any sense.
And just to back up a little bit, what Chris is saying, I mean, you know, because you can say it's subjective, but there's clearly some objective markers, right? So like the way to test that would be like, if there was something with nothing else that you had to parse through that said, if anyone prays to the Christian God, whatever he asks will be answered. Great. Because, you know, the Christians will all say, God said it. So there you go. It's not dependent on anything else. It's just anyone can say this to God at any time. And it's a test of God. Unfortunately for that position, though, you know, the Christian Bible, like we often talk about, right? Like, hey, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, the mountains will throw themselves in the ocean. It's like, but there's more. So, you know, praying in the will of God, right? For example, so there's that. And, you know, the prayers of a fervent prayers of a righteous man, or what's that verse? Someone, the prayers of a righteous man are fervent and effective or something like that. Anyway, so the point is, yeah, what Chris said, like it has biblical backing. So how do you get that, right? And it's like, let's just presume for a second, you know, like Chris and I and CEO are the Christians. We say we are. We trust Jesus. We follow Jesus. So you're like, hey, okay, well, you believe this stuff and you're legit. So we want you to be part of our study. I, for one, would just shy away from that. Maybe I'm more of a private person you think, and I just like to run my mouth on the internet where no one can see me. But I would feel weird about that. I'm like, on one, I just don't like the idea. It makes me feel kind of icky, you know, to kind of put this like sacred sovereign God, holy prayer life on display. And then on the other hand, like, it's like, yeah, all these other markers. It's like, well, how do I convey to the populace that, look, if it doesn't work, these could be very biblical reasons in my sincerely held belief why it didn't work, because they're just going to be like, oh, you're hedging. Oh, you're hedging. Well, you can say that, but I mean, it's true. So yeah, it makes you wonder what kind of people who also are steeped in scripture well enough to know this, like, you know, people who Chris would call heretics all day long, like, you know, NAR, Pentecostal, whatever people he would put the heretic, non-believer label on, they sure know the Bible well enough to know that they are very familiar with those type of verses. So it's like, knowing whether they're a believer or not, they certainly know these verses. So what would be in it for them to be part of this test? I don't know. Do they somehow think, maybe they're legit, maybe they're sincere, so let's just say maybe that. But they may also want notoriety. They also may want recognition. They also may want to get a platform to then be like, well, it didn't follow through, but that's because these people didn't have enough faith. Nothing to do with me. God is God, and I'm his chosen prophet, and these people didn't have faith. So anyway, I mean, there's lots of weird stuff around that.
Yeah, and then Nate, there's also, Michael, I just put in a peer-reviewed study, and it did show that prayer positively impacted those who were at risk of serious death. And it also had a significant improvement on women who were going for IVF. So I think you're going to find that this is going to cut both ways. So do you think it's really worth hanging our hats on one specific study?
Well, first of all, it was the only one that I was familiar with, and I'm perfectly.
I put it in the chat.
Oh, yeah, I never look in the chat. My email's in my bio if you want to send it there. I never look in the chat. I'm perfectly happy to admit and concede that the Templeton Foundation, religious base that it is just a bunch of loons trying to prove the unprovable. I don't have any skin in that game. So are the Templeton Foundation just a bunch of quacks? Sure, no problem. I got no problem.
Don't know. I have no idea who they are, but sounds sketchy.
Yeah, so it's you can look at, it's actually the John Templeton, I was mistaken, it's the John Templeton Foundation. And they have the whole mission statement on their main page about, like, inspiring awe and wonder at a created universe and garbage like that. So, yeah, I mean, are they all crackpots? Probably.
When I hear Templeton, I just think, wasn't that the little piglet's name from Charlotte's Web? Wasn't his name Templeton?
Oh, I don't remember now.
Did you ever see Charlotte's Web?
I read the book a million years ago, but...
Oh. Let's see. If anyone else has anything...
Sorry, just one other thing. So, Michael, since this peer-reviewed study in a reputable medical journal is saying that prayer is more effective for those who are getting IVF treatment and those at serious risk of death, is that the conversion moment for you, Michael, or are you now completely convinced? Because science has told us so.
Well, again...
Thank you for joining the club.
Well, again, what I would say is, like I said, email me the study. I'd love to have a look at it. Because, I mean, there's all kinds. What's that?
Oh, I said email him the study.
Yeah, email me the study. I'd love to have a look at it. But I'm not going to pronounce anything until I've, like, so I read the one from the Templeton Foundation. I've not read this one, so I'd be curious to read this one.
All right, I just emailed it to you, but it's from, like, my text number, so it might go in your junk folder. It's a 336 number. You'll have it in your email.
I'll have a look for it. Hang on a second.
All right, while you're looking for that, the topics to beat, as recommended by ChatGPT, wow, it's playing it safe. I need a good Christian topic for discussion. Faith and beliefs. Discuss your favorite Bible passages. I mean, I guess that's good for like a Bible study, but living your faith. Where do you volunteer or do charitable giving? Interfaith discussions. Common ground between faiths. Oh, come on. Give me something more controversial. Chris, what controversy have you had in your life recently?
I've been reading Tim Kaufman and some articles about the original changes in the 4th century to the order of service in churches and how that spawned a bunch of misconceptions about the communion service.
It's very interesting. I asked for that, didn't I? Okay, let's see.
So where Papists get the idea of Mass being about the body and blood of Jesus is a misconception that comes from the 4th century. And it's there in history. It's obvious, but they ignore it because they make up their own history.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, this is something that I think I mostly agree with Chris on. It's weird because, like, I'm not sure how you, I mean, like, being, you know, having the firm convictions that I have, I'm not sure how you reconcile a belief in a God. Then after you reconcile a belief in a God, then you have to reconcile your belief in the Christian God. Then you reconcile your belief in the Christian God, and somehow you get your way to Catholicism. And I don't know how you square that circle. It's an interesting ride. It's something that I speak with my father-in-law, who's an 84-year-old French Catholic, quite a bit about. And we've had some great talks about it. I don't know how he gets there. I don't know how he gets there.
But I'm imagining that it probably is not how you said. Like, you reconcile a God, then the Christian God, then Catholicism. I'm just going to imagine for probably the overwhelming majority, they don't do any of that. They just start with Catholicism because they Google religion, and the secular world seems to think like Christianity is synonymous with Catholicism. So maybe that's some of the first religious things you find. So they're just like, oh, Catholic priest. Okay. I mean, think about that. If all of your knowledge about God came from like the movies you watch, it's like, you're not going to see a lot of non-Catholic people depicted in movies, like secular. Like, it's always a priest, especially like the demony movies you watch, right? Like The Exorcist or whatever. It's like priest. So if you're like, oh, I wonder if there's a God. Okay, well, what about the Christian God? Okay, priest, Catholic. Okay, Catholic Church. Either that or their parents or friends were Catholic and, you know, indoctrinated them at a young age into Catholicism. So that's all they know. So I'm imagining they probably didn't go God, Christian, Catholic. They were probably just like Catholic. And like reverse engineered it to make sense.
I mean, maybe for him. Like I said, he's 83 years old, so he was born Catholic, like, you know, raised in that community, and that's just what he's always known. I was thinking more kind of from the outside. But what's interesting is that, like, and again, speaking of, you know, how you reconcile Catholicism, when you look at the unbelievable evils of the Catholic Church, like, have you ever seen the movie Spotlight? If you haven't, watch it. It's terrible. I mean, it's a good movie, but it's about a terrible story. It's about Bishop Bernard Law, who basically shuffled pedophile priests around New England for 35 years and was personally responsible for, like, in doing this, was personally responsible for the abuse of thousands of people in the New England area. And then when justice was kind of closing in on him and this was all exposed, John Paul II went out of the country. And he died a few years ago, thankfully. But until then, he was the Church of the Santa Maria Maggiore, placed there by the Pope. And he was actually one of the ones who voted on who was going to succeed John Paul II. And this is somebody who was, you know, just a vile thing of a human. So it's interesting.
Right there, it's just like for Christians, the Bible, and I can't think there's something in tradition that would go against the Bible, say protect bad people in Catholicism. But it's like right there, like, you know, the fact that they're trying to pull the wool over one's eyes, like keep it under wraps, like shuffle people around. And I haven't seen that movie, but I mean, I've heard of those stories of them doing that. And it's like that just flies directly. And maybe they're doing it to protect their organization. Anything with so much overhead should be concerning. It's not unlike big government. Like anything that gets too big where it's like institutional and it's like massive, international, worldwide, that should be concerning because then you have more than just the thing it's supposed to be doing. Now you have to protect the thing. So it's not like they can say, oh, we're trying to protect God. God doesn't need protecting. You're trying to protect your institution. That's your loyalty. That's your allegiance. So, like, I guess you say you believe in a God, but God doesn't need protecting. Your institution made by man is what you're trying to protect versus, like, 1 Corinthians 5:13, which says God judges those on the outside, but therefore put away from among yourselves that wicked person. So the biblical answer would be the second anyone notices something like this, you're gone. Like, you're out. Get away. Like, you know, cut out the cancer. Be gone. Like, you're out of the church. You're out of, you know, you're out of the position of authority, like whatever, like, you know, report to police as necessary and like shine a spotlight on it instead of having someone make a movie called Spotlight exposing everyone. The church should be the one, or the, you know, the Catholic institution should be the one to shine their own spotlight on all the bad stuff so they can get it out. But instead they take the opposite approach and, you know, try to hide it, and look how that worked.
Yeah, you're not going to get any you're not going to get any disagreement from me on that. CEO, I did get the email you sent me. It has a T-Mobile thing on it, but I did get it.
All right, cool. And also, I did have another thought, Michael, just objectively speaking. Do you think it's responsible to do any sort of study like that related to heart issues? Because couldn't it be the case that the people knowing people are praying for them and they're in a study could actually create more anxiety for them?
And Edwin, we'll get to you right after this.
Yeah, no, I would take it up with the people that can do, like, so the Templeton Foundation did this all on their lonesome. And I think you're probably right. The whole idea, you know, it kind of gets joked about, right? But I think the real thought.
Did he just get a call or? All right, Edward, I don't know what happened to Michael, but what's up? Go ahead while we wait for him to return.
This has nothing to do with what you were talking about, though. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But do you find that there's like a lot of Christians on this app who are very knowledgeable are just like extremely long-winded? Because I'll give an example of someone who I don't think is long-winded. I think me and Chris and I have maybe bumped heads on issues, but he's both very knowledgeable, but he's very concise and to the point. But I find, being on this app for a couple of years, that it's rare to find a Christian that's very knowledgeable, but they're just like, I find, just terribly long-winded. I have a hard time like paying attention, even though I want to. Like, I'll ask them a question, and I just zone out. Maybe it's just me. I just zone out after like a minute, minute and a half, and then I'll try to like, they go on for 5-10 minutes in these monologues. And I know I bore people myself, so I try to be conscientious how long I speak. But do you just find this on this app that Christians can be terribly long-winded?
100%. And as I say that, most of the people are probably like, yeah, Nate, you're long-winded. So I fully recognize.
You're long-winded.
I fully recognize my own shortcomings. So, like right now, my answer, like I have a tendency to ramble on. I mean, I really try not to, but I want to also get out like a comprehensive answer to cover all bases to like hopefully like quell any response comments to just like address it all at once. But sometimes I guess that takes a long time. But even though I can admit that, I know, man, there are some people that go on way longer than me, and I mean, they will just never stop unless someone makes them stop. So yes, I recognize the problem, and I recognize that I am also a part of the problem.
Yeah, and I would second that too. I would say that there are times that I'm part of the problem too. Like I can babble on for a long time. So yeah, Christians don't hold a monopoly on that.
And I thought, Joanna, I sent you a invite. I saw your hand raised. Are you up here?
So,
but, yeah, go ahead, Evan, follow up.
So. And I remember, I've told this story before. Many years ago, I was talking to this girl that I liked, and I was going on and on about something. And I was having a good time for myself. I thought I was interesting, but then she starts snoring. And she's like, Scott, that was so, she's like, Scott, that was so boring. Now, one of the things, it was just like, I was like 19 years old, and what I learned from that is, I think it's a good assumption to make that just because like I might enjoy listening to myself talk, and I like what I have to say, it doesn't mean that everybody else does. And so I try to get to just pause every minute and maybe ask a question, allow people to chime in to express interest in what I have to say. If they do, if they don't, maybe they don't care. So, but anyway, go on.
Joanna, yeah, I got Joanna for first, but I think Sean raised his hand on Edwin's question. So I think Sean wanted to say something about Edwin's question, and then we'll get to CEO and then Joanna. What, Sean?
Well, good morning, everyone, first.
Morning.
And as Smokey sang back in the 60s, I second that emotion.
Well, thank you.
I know I'm wrong. So
anyway.
But I find that a lot of people only are long. So, like, yeah, we, like,
We can't really hear you. I hear your wife on the phone in the background. We can't really hear what you're saying, though. I mean, we heard what you said to this point, but it's hard.
Like the song said, whom the captive can wear it. Thank you, Bob Marley.
CEO, what were you saying?
I was just going to say that, like, one thing to remember is the longer you speak for, the less people remember what you're actually saying.
Huh? What? Just kidding. Joanna, good morning. What's up?
Thank you. Good morning. So I've been having, a long-term struggle with the differences in the four Gospels. So I wanted to ask, because I want to learn, not because I'm debunking right now. So after, so the tomb, so when Jesus was in the tomb, it says that, of course, each account says totally different people went there, but they also says, and this was brought to my attention and I was put on the spot. So in Mark, it says that they went there after sunrise, and another gospel, it says before sunrise. Does any of this matter?
Well, ultimately, God is God, and no. Secondly, of course it matters, because you want accuracy, right? Because especially Christians like me who believe, you know, the Bible is completely accurate and it's inerrant and all of that. So, yes, it matters. So, ultimately, whether or not God exists, no, it doesn't matter. But for the accuracy, of the gospel that we claim to be infallible and all that, the most important thing to know is for 2,000-something years, people have been poring over this. So, no matter how many of these things are true or false on apologetics, counter-apologetics, like how deep someone goes, there are perfectly satisfactory answers on every side that makes sense, right? So on the apologetic side, which Chris will tell you in a moment, volunteered Chris, there's plenty of things that make sense. On the counter-apologetic side, there's plenty of things that make sense, right? So if you're looking for a compelling argument, you'll find compelling arguments all over the place. But then you have to decide, well, are any of these actually true? So I would say that's usually where it goes. People are like, well, I was convinced by this. Great. Let me give you something else that will convince you of the other side. And back and forth it goes. So really, you just have to do your research, prayerfully consider, meditate on the word, and stake your claim. Anyways, no, I don't think there's any problem. And I'll start out with one of the easiest things first. Like, for example, one of the accounts says, you know, there was a man, and then another one says an angel. And they're like, they're contradictory. I'm like, why can it not be a man angel? Come on. And I realize that's kind of rudimentary. But the thing about the sunrise, the different whatevers, Chris, do you want to give a little more in-depth explanation of that? I think I've heard you
before.
And
then also before Chris, and if you could add in so there was a rock, a huge rock, of course. So why did Mary Magdalene, why were they going in the morning to put spices on the body 2 days later? And if they knew there was a rock there, there's also not that many big boulders in Jerusalem, but there were two Roman guards placed there. So why would they need a rock? Okay. And where were these two Roman guards when they went in the morning and saw the empty tomb? You don't have to answer any of these questions, but these questions were posed to me and I had no rebuttal.
Well, I can give a quick rundown of some of those things. One, there was a boulder because it was a tomb. So, I mean, even if, like you said, well, with the guards, why do you need a boulder? Well, what, are you going to have a casket open? Well, no, you're going to close the tomb. So, I mean, the boulder is there to close the tomb. No one wants an open tomb. So that just makes sense. The guards are there specifically in the Bible because, you know, Pilate or whoever. The guy in charge says, no, we're going to put guards there to make sure the disciples don't go steal his body and say he rose. So, I mean, that story is just in the Bible. And then, you know, why did they go?
In the morning. So when they went in the morning and saw the empty tomb, where were the guards?
Well, I'm getting to that. So, you know, presumably they went to do spices. And if they're like, oh, no, there's a boulder. How can we do spices? I don't know. Maybe they were going to ask the guards to roll away the stone so they could put spices. That part's not in the Bible. But then there is a part in the Bible. Maybe someone can help me out, or we can just scour the Gospels for the story. But it's when the angel showed up. I think there's something about the guards basically, you know, got scared and ran away. I'm a little more hazy on that. I think there's a verse that talks about that or what happened. I'll look for that. But Chris, are you there? You want to speak to some of these other questions Joanna has? Chris, you disappointed.
It's okay. I understand.
We've got someone better. CEO, unless you wanted to speak to that, it seems like she wanted to.
Yeah, I wanted to give a scenario real quick. So, Joanna, if Jesus showed up in this room right now and participated for 30 minutes and we weren't able to write anything down, do you think that Michael and Chris's kind of recollection of that conversation and how they write about it would be the same? Probably not, right? Because there's differences in their life experiences and how they will interpret things. Now, that's just 30 minutes. We're talking about events that happen over the course of 3 years. I would have considered it ultra suspicious if the Gospels were exactly the same. And then especially in the case with Luke, when he wasn't there, he literally was talking to other people and putting it together. So I think vantage point is one of the things that you're looking at. It doesn't mean that it's so much inconsistent. It just means that there's different vantage points to it.
Sheep.
Yeah, one of the things
I think you said, Nate, I was coming up to confirm what you said. Yes, it does say that the guards were terrified and ran to the priest, and they told them what happened, and they told them, according to the scripture, it says, hey, keep it hush, and they gave them some money, and they told them that they will talk to their manager, whatever, right? And so they did clarify that, and the angels are the ones that moved the stone as well.
I asked for people to talk and no one wanted to. Now four people are talking at once. So hang on, we're going to go in order. I don't know who's saying anything, but I've got the answer to one of your questions, Joanna. I think Sheep kind of helped out, but there's three verses. There's three accounts. So one is Matthew. Let's see. I'm just going on what the internet gave me. So I think these are about the right story, though. Matthew 28:4. I'll just start at one. Now, after the Sabbath, toward the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and others went to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes was white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know you seek Jesus. He's not here. He's risen." I think that's one of the things Sheep may have been talking about. So they departed quickly with fear and great joy. And then it has the report of the guard in verse 11. While they were going, behold, some of the guard went to the city and told the priests all that had taken place. And yeah, exactly what Sheep said. And when they had assembled the leaders in the council, they gave them a sufficient sum of money and said, tell people his disciples came and stole the body. So that's in Matthew. Mark 16:5. I'll just get through these quickly, and then whoever wanted to speak, please do. Mark 16... 16:5. Okay. I'll start at one. When the Sabbath, Mary Magdalene, the mother of Jesus, brought spices that can anoint him. It was very early. The sun had risen. They went to the tomb. They were saying to one another, who will roll away the stone? And looking, they saw the stone was rolled back and it was very large. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe. Could that be an angel? Yes, that's the angel. And he said, don't be alarmed. You seek Jesus who was gone. So that account doesn't mention the guard, so that sounds like it was after the guard happened. And the last thing, I'm not trying to be long-winded, just reading the Bible. Luke 24:4. Okay, Luke 24:4. Luke 24. Okay. On the first day of the week, same story. They went to the tomb. Stone was rolled away. They didn't find the body of Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, two men stood in dazzling apparel, and they were frightened and bowed down. They said, who do you seek? Why do you seek the living among the dead? He has risen. So this doesn't have the guard. Okay, so the fullest account is the first one in Matthew, where that tells the whole story about what happened to the guards. So the most striking thing from this is on Matthew's account, it's more full, first of all, so there's that. So it gives a more detailed accounting, including what happened to the guards. The other two accounts just ignore anything about the guards. So that doesn't have a contradiction. That just doesn't have anything to do with the guards. It completely skips that. So you could say on one, they saw the angel roll away the stone. On the other one, the stone was rolled away and the angel was there. And on one account, there was an angel. On the second account, there is a man dressed in dazzling robes, i.e. an angel. And on the other account, there were two men dressed in robes. So I would say that goes back to CEO's point about, perspective or perception. But all right. who else wanted to speak? I heard like three people all at once.
Okay. So you had asked me earlier. So Joanna, the game that's being played with you, and it is a game. Okay. They're not actually seeking real answers because these are easily found. Like, you know, for 2000 years, people have been trying to find a hole or holes in the New Testament accounts, and they have been unable to do so. You'll get a lot of atheist cope that will try to take seeming contradictions, turn them into real contradictions, and then try to stump believers with them. But the internal accounting, that an honest atheist will tell you that the New Testament is internally consistent and that there are not contradictions in the New Testament because they have been fully played out according to the Christian worldview. If you want to do an external critique from outside of Christianity, you can attack the veracity of the Gospels, and many will do that. But the problem that you're coming up on is that there are dishonest people who are attempting to ask you questions to shipwreck your faith. And that is their absolute intention. It's an evil, mean intention that they are trying to trip you up to try to shipwreck your faith. And I would not let them do that.
Well, Chris, could I ask you a follow-up? So the two big questions that Joanna has said when she first started speaking, one, and I'll have to look for this. I don't know the verse. Maybe it was – she mentioned something. I've heard it before. It wasn't what I read because all three accounts seem to say sunrise or like the very beginning of the morning. But are you familiar with someone saying it was a different time of day or a different day? That would be one, because in what I just read, it's all the same time of day. It's early morning. And then the other one would be, how do you reconcile the accounts of not the angel and not the man angel, because it's clearly an angel, but the stone being rolled away versus the stone already rolled away, and one angel versus two angel? What would you say the...
Yeah, that's just perspectives, and that's just people highlighting different aspects because they're writing to different audiences. It's not a big deal. Again, and so the Christian worldview has answers for all of these things. Now, if you want to critique those answers, like you had said earlier, you know, then that's fine. But I think that what's happening is there are probably scumbag atheists in Andrew's room that are trying to trip up Joanna.
Yeah, but to be, you know, to be devil's advocate, let me press you kind of hard. So, you know, perspective, like CEO said, like I agree. Like, I mean, I personally, I think it's perspective and it doesn't matter. But if you wanted to really drill into this, you could say, well, perspective could be, you know, slight differences, but it would be hard to get a perspective of one versus two people. Like that's a pretty big one. So would you say like they just thought it was two? And if they thought it was two, you know, how did that make it into the Bible? Because, you know, the Bible's inerrant and all that. So to press you a little harder.
Sorry, yeah, I'm right in the middle of a work thing too. So, I was right in the middle of fixing a DNS server. What were you saying? You're pressing me on what?
Oh my gosh! The finer points. So okay. Are you ready? Okay. So sure. The finer points. So perspective can be like getting minor things off, but whenever you say perspective is like going from seeing one person to two people, that's pretty hard to mess up on perspective. Or if the stone was rolled away versus they saw the stone being rolled away. Like those are things like if I pressed you hard, which I guess I am, what do you say to that? Cause that's pretty hard to mess up.
Let's give me the specific verses. And then we would have to go through the actual text. Cause what we're doing, dealing with right now is like, so like one angel versus two angels is easy because they're just saying there was an angel. They're not specifying the number. Like they're just saying there's an angel, you know, there could have been 17 angels. You know,
okay, so
if you say there is an angel, you're not denoting that it's specifically one. That's all.
Okay, so I'll contrast this between the first one I read, Matthew versus Luke. Okay, so in Luke, are you ready? I will read this.
Hold on. Give me the references first.
Luke 24, and the actual verse is in 4, but for the context, it's like 1 through 7. So Matthew or Luke 24:4 says, while they were there perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And then we'll just contrast that with Matthew 28. which says, where's that one? Hang on, that's the wrong one. Matthew 28:4. Okay, Matthew 28:4. Okay. Okay, so remember, Luke 24:4 says it denotes two men. So this one in Matthew 28:4. Hang on. Okay, two. Now the Sabbath, toward the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb, and behold, there is a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone. So I already see an answer, but you know, not to like hedge too much, but it's like, so in one, an angel came and rolled back the stone. And then in Luke, it says the stone was already rolled back and they went in and saw two men. So in that case, you could say, well, yeah, an angel came, pieced out the stone, rolled it out of the way. Then they went in and there were two angels. So you could say that, which then the question would be, okay, so.
So here's the answer. This is just basic reading comprehension answer. So in Luke, we're getting a picture real time. In Matthew, we're getting narrative about what happened from verses 1-4. And then in 5, we pick up where Luke picks up. And it's just, but the angel said to the woman, it doesn't say that the women were witness to any of this stuff. It just says that toward the dawn of the first day, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went out to see the tomb. And then we switch, and behold, there was a great earthquake. You know, so it's like, okay, Mary Magdalene and Mary are heading out to the tomb, and here's what's going on while they're walking over there. Okay? And then, but the angel said to the woman, do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen. As he had said, come see the place where he had laid. So the women enter the tomb, and that completely comports with Luke 5 if you just do a careful reading.
Yeah, I mean,
just
I guess
basic reading comprehension.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I read it, kind of made sense in my head. It's like it's like two events. So it's like the angel gets rid of the stone, stop, the woman walk into the tomb, and there's another angel. So then the only question that would remain would be, okay, in Mark's account, they walk in to the tomb. Like, let's say the angel that rolled the thing out of the way already went away. So they walk in the room, they see an angel that continues the conversation. But in Luke, they walk in and see two who continue the conversation. So that would be the only remaining question. Was he phase shifting?
Yeah, something that I just wanted to say, and I don't think, Chris, you said something interesting there about someone trying to shipwreck someone's faith. I personally don't think I have the power to do that. I think what convinces someone. What I would say, Joanna, is that I think that the truth, whatever the truth is, should be able to withstand any degree of scrutiny.
Oh, absolutely.
So like the Bible for 2,000 years. Go on.
So keep on looking, because there are other questions about other passages. So I know that people will balk when I say this name, but there are people like Bart Ehrman who've written books about this, and people like Kip Davis who've written books about this. these are biblical scholars.
Yeah, no, they're not. These so Bart Ehrman doesn't—he is not a biblical scholar. Bart Ehrman is a church history guy, and Bart Ehrman also lies in his popular books, things that he would never say in his academic work. And he knows that he lies, and he admits that he lies. So great stuff.
Please finish, Michael.
What I would say is just keep looking, and you know, ask the questions. I think that they're all good questions. I ask questions all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. And whatever convinces someone.
And so, there's a couple things. Like, Michael, I'm sure you've met atheists, like we all have, who, I mean, you know, maybe some are pure as the driven snow, like, you know, like Michael. but there are plenty of atheists and Muslims and other religions who, you know, it's like their sick pleasure. I mean, for another religion, it may be their honest pleasure to try to convert someone, even if they use dishonest tactics, because they want them for their religion. If it's an atheist that doesn't care about any of this, and for some reason talking about to religious people is how they enjoy their free time, There are plenty of them who like admit, I mean, and go to YouTube, you can find like confessions of this, like how they admit it's like their guilty pleasure to like deconvert people. And like you said, you don't have the power to deconvert someone or whatever. You don't have the power to do that. Unfortunately, it doesn't mean you're right. Like if someone tries to like get in and like use dishonest tactics or twist scripture or come up with like some counter apologetic, knowing that it's lies. And if this people is like, are like wise enough to their Bible or wise enough to this argument, they'll just shut it down and they're like, oh crap, well, it didn't work today. But if they catch like one of these people that are new to the faith or don't really know what their own book says because they just haven't studied it that much to know the stuff, then those honest tactics could make them stumble and question their faith and, you know, be like, oh, well, I can't believe this because of this argument. No, I didn't know the Bible said that. And it's like, did you read the Bible? The Bible doesn't say that, for example. And it's like the atheist is over here, like, you know, watching these Christians trying to like, you know, reverse educate someone. Be like, look, just read the Bible. This is what it says right here. They are lying to you. It's like, no, no, I can't believe this. God couldn't let this happen. How can there be blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, truly, someone shouldn't have the power to shipwreck someone's faith, unfortunately, because there are a lt of people who aren't wise enough to these, whatever these arguments are that would do that, that they can be completely false, lying arguments, but they follow them because they sound convincing. Like what I said earlier, like there's no shortage of apologetic or counter-apologetic about the tomb. I'm being long-winded, I'm sorry. But so there are very convincing arguments, like I think the ones we just made. And you could also say there are crafty, convincing arguments on the other one. Like, well, technically, you know, the Bible's supposed to be God's honest word. So if one little comma is out of place, God is a lie. So I mean, that's – I didn't do that justice, but you know what I mean. There's convincing arguments on all sides. But
no, I know
just because it's convincing doesn't mean it's true. So if someone just buys it and they're absolutely like, well, I'm convinced it makes sense. Now they're no longer a Christian. and none of it was true.
Yeah, I think probably the best way to sum up what you just said is that it's been my experience, and I think it's probably fair to say that it would be I think it's fair to say that you'll find good and bad faith actors on both sides of the coin. And I think you have to be able to, I guess, just use some discernment on whether or not you, like how seriously you take what anyone says to you. I think you will. Like I have encountered other atheists who I think are bad faith actors. And I call them out for it. And I've also encountered many Christians who I believe are bad faith actors, and I call them out for it too. But it isn't. I don't think it's black and white. I think it's shades of gray.
As far as who's honest and not, I agree. And Edwin, I saw your hand. And Tactical, I saw your hand. I tried to invite you. So if you didn't get that invite, I mean, know that I did try. So I don't know what's going on. It must be a glitch. But I see what you wrote in the chat.
Yeah, he's right. Norman Geisler's Big Book of Bible Difficulties is excellent. It's really good.
And I do remember, it just makes me think of one guy. I don't remember his name now. It was probably about a year ago, and we just met him, and he said he was I don't remember if he said he was like agnostic or leaning Christian, but or he was a Christian of some sort, like a very new, not well-versed Christian. And over like a few months we knew him, it's like every couple weeks he'd pop in, and for a while there he was like something different. Because he just found Clubhouse, and whatever he was, like agnostic or very, very like new Christian or exploring Christian.
I remember who you're talking about. Yeah. I can't think of their name either. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably when I wouldn't say his name if I did know it, but I honestly forget who it was now, but I know where he is from, but I won't say that either. But, we met him. He was a Christian. Then a couple weeks later he popped in and like, he was a Christian for a couple times. And then finally, and it's only ever a couple weeks we saw him. And then he's like, I'm a Muslim now. And we're like, what? And it's like, yeah, they convinced me the Bible's not true, blah, blah, blah. Atheists are dumb. Christians are wrong. You know, there's no God but God. And he like, you know, took his little Shahada thing online. And then a couple weeks later, we saw him again. And he's like, no, they're all like, you know, did you know that they believe X amount of things they believe that are bad? He's like, I had no idea. And, you know, child brides and all this stuff. And they're all like this, blah, blah, blah. And I guess like a couple Muslims tried to talk him in out of it and say, that's not right. And they're wrong. And there's like a Muslim battle back and forth for who is the real Muslims. And he finally got sick of that after he'd taken his Shahada like online or whatever. That's what it's called. Right. So anyways, next couple weeks he popped in and he's an atheist. And then he had like a tribe of Muslims like going after him because he already like took his vows. So I'm like, dude, they treat that very seriously. You should not have done that. So maybe that's why we haven't seen him in a year. But anyways, well, it's like everyone would just give him convincing arguments and he never verified it really or never looked into what he really truly believed was true. It's just like he was convinced like on the fly. So he's like Christian, Muslim, atheist, and now who knows what.
Well, if memory serves, this gentleman was also faced with some very serious health challenges. And I haven't seen him for a long time. I hope he's still okay. But yeah, I remember speaking with him at length. And he had some very serious health challenges. And I think part of his struggle being pulled back and forth was he was dealing with his own mortality. And I think I think he was scared.
You think he's expired?
I hope not, but I've not seen him like you in a long time. And we shared, like we had a private, he and I had a private conversation. And he was dealing with some very serious health challenges.
Oh, well, gosh, I hope the best for him. Edward, you raised your hand a little bit ago. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with these supposed discrepancies. I don't believe they're discrepancies at all. But do you think, like, the New Testament authors and the copyists in the first century were aware of these so-called discrepancies?
Well, of course. They had the same scriptures we have.
Sure.
Like, of course they did. And that's like, one of my chief things, right? Even because when we talk about inerrancy, it's like, look, the inerrancy we mean is, like, the point of the Bible that you're supposed to get across, you've got it. There's no problem. So we're not talking about perception or allegory or literal. Like, you know, I mean, the Bible, like, the context tells you how to read these things. So they're like, oh, you're just saying it's literal when it needs to be literal. And you're saying it's allegory and it's not. It's like, well, no, we believe the context shows you that. So, like, infallibility, like, inerrancy, like, that's what we mean. Like, the points you're supposed to get, they are in there. So, like, there's room. Like, if we just wanted to chalk it all up to, like, vantage point, like, type perception, fine, you can do that. I mean, I don't think that's completely correct. I think there's nuance. But it would still be fine even if you did that. But yeah, Edwin, no, well, sorry, to answer your question, I'm consciously thinking, be short, and I'm being longer. But, okay, so whenever – that's one of the biggest defenses, I think, is these people. You can't say they're, like, dumb goat herders on one hand and then on the other hand be like, oh, they're mastermind manipulators and, you know, they're, like, expert linguists. So, like, come on, which is it? Let's just cut the middle and say they at least knew how to read and copy stuff, right? So, of course, they when they were putting these Bibles together, they had all the scriptures because they put them together. Now we have the Bible. So they saw these supposed discrepancies, but clearly they had an understanding – that they're like, yeah, there's no problem. Like, it doesn't matter if some people think it's a contradiction. It's not. We know the truth. We know how to understand this, so we're throwing them all in the Bible. If they truly would have thought it was a discrepancy, then in Christianity there would be a thing that said something like, this is partly God's word, or all of this shouldn't be taken accurately, or they would have just did what the Muslims did and outright omitted some of it to make it unified, mm-hmm. and to make it sound the same. But since they didn't, I think that's a great evidence for, no, they have a clear understanding that there's no problem with these scriptures. That's why it's all together. So if you see it as a conflict, that's your problem, not the people who put the book together.
Exactly. No, well said, Nate. And do you think that God purposely, I mean, this is just speculation, that God puts these things in the Word of God to kind of like further blind people that don't want to believe and to test the faith? Because I don't think it's a discrepancy at all, but do you think he puts this to cause us, to cause like unbelievers to stumble, to give them an excuse, even though it's not a legitimate excuse? Do you think he does that?
Man, I don't know if it's, I mean, that's a good point. I don't know if it's nearly that that supernatural. I think the Bible just says what it thinks, or the Bible just says what it says, and all the Christians, the people who put this stuff together, they're like, yeah, there's no problem. It's very plain. Our understanding is very plain. There's no problem. We're just going to put this in. And I mean, because we see when Jesus told parables, like, he didn't necessarily need, I mean, like, looking back at it now, it's like, if you just read the parable, like, Michael can read the parables, and I think most of the time, yeah, I mean, it's almost like a proverb, right? Like, it's very easy to just understand what it's talking about. I'm trying to think of something. Like, you know, the guy who, like, beats a servant or whatever forgives him, and, you know, the other guy doesn't forgive the person that owes him much less money. Like, if you read some of these parables, even with your natural eyes, it's like, oh, okay, it's fairly easy to get the moral of the story. Maybe there's a deeper spiritual meaning, but you can fairly easily grasp it. Yet, when Jesus told parables, it's like, why do you speak in parables? It's like, well, the people that are supposed to get it are going to get it, and the people that aren't supposed to get it won't get it. So when it comes to, you know, supposed contradictions in the Bible or something like that, I don't think it needs to be a supernatural thing. Because if God, like, people are going to get hung up on Jesus as God, right? So there's no need to, like, make them extra hung up on a man, an angel, a man angel. Yeah, I mean, if God's going to, like, supernaturally confuse some, it's going to be on, I don't know, the gospel or the stuff that actually matters. So no, I mean, you could say it's a test of faith, or it's to show your, I don't know, whatever. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. But personally, I don't think it's that supernatural. No, I think if they're going to get hung up, it'll be on the parables.
Yeah, I hear you. One last thing. I mean, obviously, it's not a discrepancy at all, because they can both be true at the same time. If I say to you, I have a brother, well, it doesn't mean that I don't have three other brothers or a sister. I'm just, the statement, there's one angel, there's two angels, could be true at the same time. So it's not a contradiction at all. I mean, it's just obvious to me. But anyway, I'm done.
Any sheep? Did you have anything else to say?
Yeah, I mean, the lady left, but the concept, I think, for anyone who makes a claim, I think these are Muslims that we have to deal with a lot of the times. I talk to Muslims a lot. For them to say there's some contradiction within the scripture, I think that would be a false claim, especially if you say there's a contradiction within the gospels or the accounts. Then you have to give us an account to which where you know those disciples are in the same place at the same time. And that's how a lot of people critique the, you know, the accounts with the four accounts. Like, you know, the popular one is now, I think it was what's his name? The guy who hanged himself, right? Judah. There are two accounts. One, he fell on his head and, you know, he dispersed, whatever, right? And the other one is he hanged. And so they take that as the same time in the same place, and then they say that's a contradiction. And it's like, come on, guys. Like, are you serious? Because you can't say that. Like, it's two different people writing two different accounts. And they even admit to that. They're writing according to their accounts. So for them to say, like, oh, there's a contradiction, I think that's a problem on their side. And then the other thing is, I think you have to come to the scripture when you critique it in a way that you know that that person specifically writing according to his own account. So those are the things we just need to separate. And then we have no problem making a claim of contradiction. Now, if you have a problem, I mean, that's fine. And that's, you know, whatever. But you can't say it's a contradiction.
Yeah, I think the Judas thing is easy. Like, I mean, just, you know, just common sense. Like, I think that's a very easy one, because it's like, look, did he hang? Did his gut spill out? Well, how hard is it to think? Like, has anyone ever seen a Western movie in their life? It's like, you know, you hang, and at some point, you know, the rope broke, or his rotting corpse, detached him from the rope. He falls, stumbles forward, and, you know, hits a tree, you know, a tree root sticking out, or a rock or something like that, and his guts spill open. Like, that's disgusting, but that's very easy to reconcile. And the overarching message of this is, don't betray Jesus. That's the takeaway.
I understand. Oh, Nate?
No, I'm done.
Okay, yeah, I've heard, I think I, someone can correct me, but I understand that, I think it's in Luke's account, We read about his guts coming out. And someone pointed out that the reason why Luke would have mentioned that is because Luke was a doctor. That was just something that I've heard. So he'd be...
Yeah, I've heard that too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, to be fair, another way of reading that, yeah, it could have been like both things happen. Like, you know, he was hanging and his guts spilled out, and someone's just like, oh, well, yeah, there his guts are, but, you know, clearly, you know, he died from hanging, so that's what I'm going to write. Where if there was another account, it could be like, I went and there was a willow branch on the tree in which he was hanging, and, you know, the neck had him cinched with 18 knots, and his guts were also spilled out, and, you know, lo, it was a grassy field with tree roots everywhere. Like, you know, so, I mean, of course there was more detail that wasn't written down. Someone could have told, you know, if the sky was dark and cloudy that day. So I don't think that's a problem at all. But see, like, if you read in the chat, guys, feel free to jump up. I mean, you know, we don't have a plethora of people trying to talk right now, but Random and Honest says, you know, Christians trying to defend the Bible's contradiction is the epitome of motivated reasoning and cognitive bias. Like I said, I don't, like, that's not my dog in this fight. like if the Bible is full of like legit contradictions where it's like, I don't even know if it's just like, you know, the resurrection story, if it was like incredibly hard, a contradiction where it said, you know, there was, I'm having trouble thinking of something that would be hard enough to reconcile, but you know, there were 16 guards and I observed this, and this is not a perspective. I'm detailing this with three witnesses. There were three witnesses next to me, and it names all the witnesses, all the disciples. And it's like, there were 16 guards and, you know, 10 angels came down and they had a conversation and ate a meal. And then another account was like, no, I went, there was no guard. No guard was present. At the same time, all these other disciples said they were detailing this account of us, 10 angels and 16 guards talking. I was there at this time. I am one of the disciples he witnessed. I am telling you, he is a liar. I'd be like, oh, crap. Well, that's a contradiction. But that wouldn't matter. That's because I'd be like, well, look, does that have anything to do with, you know, Jesus being God and forgiving your sins? No. So, yeah, the Bible has contradictions. Who cares? Jesus is God. That would be my stance. But since there's nothing even close to that level, that's why we say the Bible doesn't have contradictions. And if it did have contradictions, we'll be like, well, that's not necessary from our faith to claim the Bible is the infallible word of God. We just say it's the infallible word of God because it seems to be the infallible word of God. Hey, Adam, what's up?
Not much. How are you all doing today, this morning, this afternoon, this evening, wherever y'all are at?
Good, good. E-Bike, I sent you an invite, too.
What's up?
What's up, man? I saw your hand raised. Oh,
yeah,
apparently a tactical right. Preacher can't get up here. I keep trying to invite him. Apparently he can't get up though. Yeah, what's up, E-Bike?
Well, I have a theology book that I read this in. I don't know, you might disagree, but he brings up contradictions in the Bible in the theology book, and he says that contradictions are like they're only a problem depending on the type of reasoning we're using. Like in analytical logic, you're going to avoid contradictions. But there's other types of reasoning. And he says, like, some of the books in the Bible were written before analytical logic was, like, a thing. And that, like, now, of course, it's, like, super popular. And the Western world is, like, obsessed with analytical logic. So people are, like, looking for contradictions on everywhere. But there's another type of way to reason, which is called synthesis. And that's like analytical logic is like you look at the tree and ignore the forest. And synthesis is like you see the forest and not just the tree.
Like holistically.
Yeah, it's like a holistic type of reasoning where you go, okay, this is true and this is true and they contradict each other. What kind of information do we glean from the contradiction? And the Bible presents this form of reasoning. So like it's not really an issue or anything that, you know, like I think the Bible's inerrant and I think it has contradictions and I don't see an issue. There's no issue with that. So,
you know, one thing that bothers me more than most things on this earth is when it's like, what possible reason would, if your name is, I don't know, if your name is E-Bike and I just call you B-Bike, like what possible reason would I have to do that? I have no knowledge to call you B-Bike. I clearly see your name as E-Bike. You identify yourself as E-Bike. So when my name is clearly Nate, and there's no earthly reason to call me Nathaniel or Nathan, but people do it, I'm like, why? Are you somehow trying to show like a twisted respect that you think that's like some honor to call me by what you think my real name is? Or what? Like, anyways, it just bugs me. Anyways, so Honest in chat says, Matthew 1:6. Jesus's lineage. If Chris is listening, I'd love him to answer. I mean, we all know the answer, but traces through David's son Solomon. Luke 3:31. Jesus's lineage traces through, I guess you meant David. He says Nathan. Which is it? So the short version of this is let me just back up. So one lineage goes through Joseph, one lineage goes through Mary. The perceived issues you're having has to do with help me out, Chris. Is it starts with a J, Jacob. Huh? What? Yeah. What's the curse? I like how it tries to show like it goes through.
Oh, David, the curse of Jehoiakim.
Yes. Jehoiakim. So like, that's the answer, right? One lineage goes through Mary. One lineage goes through, Joseph. and the lineage that goes through the Davidic line goes back through right to Jehoiakim, how it says, because the prophecy says, you know, Jesus will come through the lineage of David and be king. The curse of Jehoiakim says, your descendants will never be king. But one of the things in the genealogy there shows how Jesus can still be through the lineage of David and by way of being through the lineage of Jehoiakim, yet also be king. So that's somewhere in your question. That's the problem you're having, and that's the answer to it. Would you like to elaborate on that, Chris, or think I did good enough?
I mean, you nailed it. I mean, it's just, again, we talk about honest and dishonest, right? So honest inquiry is the most dishonest of the atheists.
You guys ever like look at...
I'm sure
like,
he means that in a nice way, Francis.
You ever look at some of the names in the Bible and wonder why it sounds like they were named after a sneeze? Jehoiakim.
Oh, like... I was thinking of...
Bildad, yeah. So far in EU.
I like Saint Gesundheit.
Let's see. Did Jesus' parents know about his future greatness or not? Well, yeah, man. You were a Christian for like a million years, and I know you know the Bible. Did Jesus' parents know about his future greatness? Like, remember that? Like, I don't know, like Matthew 1? Does it start in 2 after the lineage? Like, when it's like, an angel of the Lord showed up to Mary and said, you shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us, and he will be great. And then, you know, an angel also shows up to Joseph and tells him to chill out. You know, this is from God. 100%. Like, even if you don't believe the story, like, there's, like, no way you could deny that the words are in the paper. Like, yeah, an angel says, hey, you're going to give birth to a guy that you're going to name God with us, Emmanuel. They knew of his greatness. Luke 2, 48, 50. Yeah, who wanted to speak?
I mean, And like, if you look, you know, back through Jesus's lineage, okay, yeah, it came through, you know, the line of David. But if you look real closely, it came through the line of David with Bathsheba, not even with David's first wife. So, I mean, like God had an order and a plan and a reason for everything that he did, you know, up to that point. And even beyond that point, but yeah, that's like when you look back at the lineage, yeah, it goes through, you know, David, and that's why, you know, they said that, you know, he'd be from the lineage of David and all of that stuff and everything throughout all of the Old and New Testament.
I can read this.
Yeah, what? Oh, hang on one second. Yeah, Ebike, let me just address this. I mean, Jeff, or Honest, this is probably the last time I'll address you today because this is ridiculous. So you ask if Jesus' parents know he's going to be great, and, you know, I gave my answers. You can clearly read them in the Bible where the angel shows up and says he will be called God with us, Emmanuel. So, yes, they know, and then he says that no, they didn't know that. Read Luke 2, 48-50. Man, I mean, this is just...
Can I read that?
Well, I'm going to read it.
Okay, sure.
This is a point about this. Man, it's dishonest. Honest. I don't know what to say. I know you're a nice guy, and we get along sometimes when you talk. But you know better than this. Okay, so Luke, 2:48-50, and then we'll probably just move on. So, and when his parents, and this is when Jesus is in the temple, and they can't find him, they're searching for him. And when Jesus' parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand saying that he spoke to them. How in the world, so hard to be Christian right now, answering this. How in the world do you relegate them not knowing that he must be in the temple about his father's business with them not knowing that he was destined to be great? Like, I don't even have really polite words to address that. Like, that is so either just ignorant, which I know you're not because you're a Christian forever and you know the Bible very well, or, I mean, I can't even think you're trying to be dishonest because you know we know better than this. So I guess we just got to move on. Like, that's ridiculous. Yes, the angel says he's going to be great. He is called God with us, and an angel told her this. And then they go to talk to Joseph and say, hey, be cool with this. You know, God and Mary, are having, your son's going to be called Emmanuel. He's going to be great. And then to say that they don't know he's going to be great and all the stuff the angel said, because he went missing and they couldn't find him, and they found him in the temple. And he said, you didn't know that I must be in the temple about my father's business. Those two things cannot even be separated by a big enough category. Okay, I'm sorry. Random, what's up, Random? Oh my gosh, that's so frustrating. Are you speaking, Random?
Hello.
Hello. What have you got for us?
So I guess I have a curiosity. There are many sections, specifically in the Gospels, and the Gospels are referred to as kind of being the eyewitness testimonies, but they speak of events that certainly not even the author was there for. So are those specific events also eyewitness?
Oh, sorry, I was texting. Does anyone else want to answer that? I apologize. I was trying to answer a text.
Sorry, I'm in the middle of something. What?
Oh my gosh! Was the question? Say it again, Random. We're sorry.
Yeah, no worries. So there are events that happen or are told in the Gospels to have happened, but it's clear that the author wasn't there for that event or those events. Are those still considered eyewitness?
They're recording eyewitness accounts from people they're interviewing. So, like in Matthew, when it says that the Roman soldiers were bribed, how does Matthew know that? Well, Matthew knows that from interviewing Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who were part of the Sanhedrin, who would have been in on that. And so he is writing down first-person accounts. That's all. It's pretty simple.
Okay, cool. And so Mark, was he one of the apostles?
No. So Mark is, again, he's interviewing people that were on scene, interviewing all of the other apostles. And so Mark is simply writing down their stuff.
And so when Mark records these events that seemingly weren't the supposed people he was interviewing wasn't even an eyewitness for, that wouldn't be a firsthand account. That'd be like a second or third, right?
No, he's interviewing people giving him firsthand accounts. He's simply recording firsthand accounts. That's all. So, like, if in a court of law you've got a record of somebody testifying to some type of fact, the record is not a secondhand account. The record is a firsthand account of that first person's testimony. It's not a secondhand account.
Okay, so...
Correct? Is that correct? Yes or no?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Okay.
But it goes into, I guess, a little bit of my question. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I thought I heard something from your end. No. I guess my question is, so who exactly is Mark interviewing for the record of that gospel?
Right. So it's not entirely clear who is telling him the different parts of his gospel. It would be a collection of people who were living at the time that he wrote his gospel, which we think is very, very early. And so, you know, specifically like with Mark, he would have been interviewing the apostles that he was well familiar with from other testimony that we see in Acts, like who Mark was, whose associates were, etc. And so he would have been going to Jerusalem and interviewing the actual people that participated in the actual events as first-person accounts. But he doesn't record. I'm sitting down here with John the Apostle, and this is his testimony, right? So John the Apostle wrote a gospel that is his testimony, right? It is written directly not for... So this is why the gospels are so beautiful, is that we have first-person accounts like Matthew, who is writing his own experiences and also interviewing people. So that's one mix. We have Mark, who wasn't there for any of it. He's just relaying first-person accounts from interviews from people. We have John, who is just giving his testimony, right? And then we have Luke, who is, again, interviewing people that were there. So we have two of the Gospels that were interviewing people that were there. We have one that's a mix of both interviews and first-person accounts. relaying first-person accounts and also participating in first-person accounts, and one that is purely participatory. So we have a solid mix of testimony throughout the four Gospels.
Sure. So it kind of addresses my question, but I guess so just for clarity, the recording or the Gospel of Mark, the exact individuals who are giving the account is essentially unknown.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it could be a mix, right? I mean, because it doesn't say. So Mark could be like, you know, yeah, I totally know this guy. You know, Joas Sophanus. Yeah, he's my neighbor. I totally know him. I've known him since we were kids. And then I also got two more accounts from these people that I don't know. They just walked by and heard me talking to, you know, my friend who I know very well, but didn't bother to include his name because no one else knows him. Why would I? So they heard that, and then they gave their account, and it matched up with what this guy was saying. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there could be a mix. It just doesn't say. So he could have known some very well. He could have not known some at all. But I think the fact that, you know, they're, I mean, it seems like their story is all lined up because that's what made it to the book. Otherwise, I mean, you would have think, well, hey, this guy says this, but then this other person says this, and they would have either just left the whole story, all accounts out, like, well, we don't know what's true, so we just won't include any of it. Or they would have been like, well, we don't know what's true. We have a couple accounts. Let's just include all of it. Sheep.
Yeah, an example for this is Paul, right? When he receives a revelation, he goes straight to the apostles and get all the information. He doesn't specify the direct person that he actually talked to, right? He doesn't say, I talked to Peter and Paul or, you know, I talked to Peter or I talked to John. He doesn't really say that. He just says, I talked to the apostles and the apostles gave me this account and I also saw Jesus. So like a lot of the disciples within that, you know, the writers in the scripture, they didn't think it was necessary for them to say, I went and knocked on John's door, ate dinner with him, and then I wrote the story. It's simply like, yeah, I got the account and I wrote the story and this is what you need to know. And that's pretty much how the story is written. And anything else that you can't critique, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, people can always be a critic, right? Because then, like, how many people criticize Paul and they're like, and it's like exactly the opposite, right? And it's like, oh, so you mean Paul had this experience by himself, no one else was there. Like, we're only supposed to take Paul's word, like an eyewitness, that what you want for all the other stuff. Like an eyewitness is now what you have, but now you're calling into question the eyewitness account. Like, can you never be happy? So, I mean, people can always find a reason to question and criticize, I think many times to their own detriment.
You know what I think is so neat about Jesus in the Bible?
What's
that? And this is with just, you know, here and now. What was so neat is that the popularity of him grew so quick and so fast without the need of social media or media in general.
Sure. And it's, I mean, it kind of speaks to the point where, like, the, you know, the priest finally said, like, look, just at a time, they said, look, just don't harass him. Don't harass his followers. Like, you know, there have been many people like this guy with their own little followings and they all go away. So they're like, basically, like, it's either going to go away on its own or something like it's going to, you know, basically show he's legit. And then whenever it shows that he's legit, they're like, oh, well, crap, we can't have that. Now let's kill him. But remember that in the Bible, it's like for a while, there's like, look, just leave him alone. And, you know, if it's not true, it'll die out like all these others did. But it didn't die out. Michael, it's been a while. Do you have anything else to say about anything? Oh, Chris, who are you telling you needs to read a book? What book are you telling him to read?
Oh, I'm just telling Dishonest Inquiry to read any book whatsoever.
So
I don't
crazy.
Think he actually got past the third grade.
He just said, I have no problem being irrational, but yet he demands us for rational arguments. But he's like, I'm just going to be irrational, but you guys have to be rational. Like, what kind of, what is that?
That's the double standard, my friend. I mean, you know this from reading Pillows. So, like, there's a double standard. So atheists can be irrational all day long, but Christians are held to a different standard. Because if there weren't double standards, there'd be no standards whatsoever.
They're like, oh, you just assume God, but meanwhile, they just assume there is no God, and for right. some, that's okay.
Or they just assume, or they just assume like logic is a thing, or they assume that human reasoning is a thing, yeah, or they assume nuts. Anything. There's like, it's like, well, you just start with an assumption. Well, so do you. Like,
yes,
everyone has to start with.
I'm going
to
interrupt and say, I never said that that was a specific issue. I did.
Oh,
I was merely pointing
it
out.
No, not you. I'm talking about. I'm talking about honest.
Yeah, we're talking about honest inquiry.
Dishonest inquiry.
You know what I think is so, like, crazy?
Honest,
is
if you want to jump on stage and talk, just let me know if you want to speak, you know.
He's far too terrified.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, it's me. It's just Adam. The nobody in the room.
You matter.
I think it's so...
You matter like, to Spider-Man.
I think it's so, like... Like... An atheist, they have to have, and I'm going to use this term and they don't like it, but they have to have so much faith in what they believe to try to disprove what we believe. Man, if I had that much faith in God, like I have a lot of faith in God, but if I had the amount of faith that they have trying to disprove God and trying to prove us wrong, bro, I mean, how much more...
Can
you
I address
know, you
that?
You see, and going on in these days, it's crazy.
Yeah, quickly, Random, and then I'll get to Bill and Honest. Yeah, go ahead, Random.
Adam, do you have faith that you exist?
On a good day.
On a good day.
No, it is a serious question. Do you have faith? Would you count it in faith that you exist?
That I exist?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think you should say blind faith, because faith doesn't.
Yeah, I have faith that God created me for a purpose.
I'm saying your understanding of your existence is just, do you exist? Is that a matter of faith?
Do you mean blind faith when you say faith? Because faith doesn't entail like you don't have any reason or something.
Yeah, I think
faith,
you just need to lead us to the conclusion.
You can't see.
It is so, merely I make the assumption that I exist, and then I rest everything, all of my experiences, based on my existence. I acknowledge that it's an assumption, and so it's not faith that I have. It. It's just merely an assumption, and I acknowledge that if it's not true, then it's not true, and everything falls apart.
Okay, Mr. Bill. Oh, I wanted to get to the other people. Mr. Bill, what's up? Did you want to... Oh, wait, is Mr. Bill gone?
Yeah, he just left.
Okay, Honest. Welcome to the fire pit, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, what's up?
What's up?
You asked me to come up on stage. I'm here. You know, everybody's saying I was a coward. And
oh, no, no. I was just giving you an opportunity because they were like, you know, they were kind of like going hard at you in voice and figured, well,
oh,
it'd be fair if you came up here to, you know, say your piece too.
Niggers.
Does any atheist want to claim that guy as someone from your camp?
That's not fair. He could be a Christian.
I don't know. I'm not claiming him.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I mean, if he could just like, you know, stop with the slurs for 2 seconds, maybe we could have a conversation and figure out. But you know, I'm going to assume, like Random does, based on all evidence presented to me, I will just assume he is a non-religious person. Yeah, Honest.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too concerned with the heckling from the stage. I'm quite used to theist acting that way, to be quite honest.
Well, it hurts a little bit, but...
We weren't heckling. We were offering criticism of your position.
So tell us why all facts and intelligibility have to be grounded in the unembodied mind of the Christian God. Go ahead.
Yeah, I told you in the chat.
Yeah, you just repeated the claim in the chat. You want to go again?
Any of what you just said? That was like micro machine or the what I was made, guy? Micro machines. Like
I made
what
a.
What did you actually say?
I made a logical argument, man. It's not repeating the claim. I made an argument.
What did you repeat? Can you say that again?
Why do all facts and intelligibility have to be grounded in the unembodied mind of the Christian God? That's what a Christian.
Oh no.
That's right.
I can't do priesthood. Right. Oh no.
That's what they're doing. Yeah, that's what Ebike does. That's what Chris does, and it's horrible. It's the worst argument ever, and they
can
stand
we just
by
say
it.
Repent and believe the gospel?
And every time you're asked. You get asked for the argument. All they do is repeat the claim. Well, it's because of the impossibility of the inverse, right? The impossibility of the contrary. Well, that's just stating the claim in the inverse, right?
Jeff, so can we just stipulate that you'll just be a Christian right now if they don't use the precept on you anymore? Can you just take one for the team?
You have to use precept because we evaluate evidence through our worldview. And so if you, in your worldview, you've already removed God, then you can throw 1,000 evidences at this guy and he's not going to accept it. He's just going to reject them because we interpret the evidence through the worldview. So that's why
I agree, except the argument will never end there. Like it will just be like the two choices I see are I agree with what you say. So either you have to just shut down the argument or buckle up and be prepared to endure a never ending discussion.
But even the evidentialist approach,
I think the honest thing for presuppositionalists to do is just admit that they don't have any argument or any reason for what they say, and
like,
it's just
why?
something that they've just poofed out of the air.
Well, why don't you offer a substantive criticism? Like, do you have a problem with transcendental proof as evidence? Do you disagree with transcendental proof?
Do you know what transcendental proof is, honest?
Yeah. Okay, so there's hard presuppositional, and I can't remember the exact words. It's not hard and soft, but there's actually two lines of arguments.
Hang on a second.
Epistemic and
ontological. No. If I may. Honest. Do you know what the transcendental proof is? This is me as an atheist talking to you, being very disappointed in you.
So what are you asking exactly?
What is a transcendental proof? What is or the transcendental proof?
Let me pull up a paper of Van Til versus Stroud, and I'll read you my understanding of it.
You're over here throwing rocks, saying that we have nothing to base anything on. You don't even know the arguments at hand.
I don't memorize all the papers that I read, right? So I'm going to refer to an article by Balint Bekefi on Van Til versus Strad about the transcendental arguments, right? So
now,
I don't memorize all this.
Well, hang on one second, if I can, I'd like to. If Random was still talking, I'd like to get his take because I try not to remember most of the stuff because it's mind numbing, but I'm thinking what. Random was saying is this is kind of like not stuff you have to try to remember. Like you just know
Correct.
This if you're in this argument at all. And the fact that you don't know kind of like the fundamental tenets of this argument.
Well, I do. I was looking for two words.
Well, hang on. Cause Random was talking. I wanted to get back over to him real fast because I think that's what he was saying is the fact that you're missing the ABCs is what disappoints him as an atheist. It sounded like he wasn't quite done. So I'd like for him to just finish real fast and then hear what you have to say.
If you have to make reference, at least without even like getting a general concept, when transcendental is made reference to, that's what's disappointing. I'm not asking for a specific thing about a specific thing that you can read off. I get that, not memorizing that, but like, dude, just transcendental. What does transcendental mean in this context? That's my point. That's what's disappointing.
I don't know who to have more faith in. I mean, Random, you're sounding pretty good. I mean, I thought we had the robe size
Transcendental just look. Transcendental just means it's not relating to the physical, right? That's all it means.
No, it means like it's the same as a presupposition. It refers to a foundational belief that we use to evaluate and interpret reality.
Yeah, transcendental just means something that doesn't refer to the physical realm, okay?
No, that's not what it means. I mean, it can mean that, I guess, but in this context, it means a foundational belief that is like necessary to evaluate and interpret reality.
Right. It's so what I said is in there's a reason I said in this context. Look, man, like I don't agree with presuppositionalism, but at the very least, I've put effort into understanding where it all comes from. Like, that's what makes you sound dishonest. And this is coming from me, and I mean it. It makes you sound incredibly dishonest.
Well, again, so I've given you the definition of transcendental. It's not dealing with the physical. I have read lots of things from Kant and from Van Til, Stroud, and I think I do have it. I apologize. I don't remember everything. When I was asked about transcendentals, I understand that the newest understanding of transcendental arguments that there's kind of two forms that they take. And that's what I was trying to come up with the words. I forget the words that they use for it.
Ontological. Epistemic and ontological.
No, that's not it. It's like a strong and a weak, basically. Here you go. Two types. Modest transcendental arguments. So this is from Stroud. It gave rise to a distinction between two types of transcendental arguments, modest transcendental arguments, which only seek to prove that some propositions must be believed for language or meaning or intelligibility, right? So all it takes for the modest transcendental argument is you have to believe this. An ambitious transcendental argument argues that the proposition must be true for these experiences to hold. So that's what I was looking for, to look for the words, was modest and ambitious. And it says that seeing the difficulty of developing a sound, ambitious transcendental argument, many have come to believe that formulating such arguments is likely impossible. And that's from Stern.
But that's neither here nor there. Like, I mean, we just have to back up again to his, and we could please move on. Like, we don't need to lord it over anyone. But I mean, I think the fact that, you didn't readily know, like you kind of came in like guns blazing, right? Like, you're wrong. I'm going to tell you why. And then it's like, someone asks you like one of the very basic things that you would know presumably in this argument if you're knowledgeable, and you're like, well, crap, let me give you a definition. It's like, well, no, we don't need a definition. Like, they know the definition. The fact that you don't readily know like the very basics of this argument is what was kind of dishonest. And let me, full transparency, right? I've sat through this stuff for hours of my life. I mean, you can probably add it up in days and weeks and probably weeks of my life. I've sat through deep philosophical discussions and ontological and transcendental and tag and all this stuff, and it just numbs my brain. So every single time I hear it, and they're like talking about the Trinity, they're like, oh, is that an ontological nature or blah 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 nature? I'm like, okay, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. You don't know this. I'm like, I promise, dude, I've sat through this class like 1,000 times. Every single time it just numbs my brain. So just tell me in plain words what you want to know, and I'll give you a plain answer. And by the way, you could use that as a mark of an expert, right? If someone is truly knowledgeable in their position, they will be able to dumb it down in lay terms. And if they can't, that's a failing on their part. So I would say, just to help you out there, Jeff, I would be in your boat, but I also would, approach it that way instead of maybe like how you did. But just saying.
Yeah. So my wife is telling me I have to go walk our dogs with her right now. So I'm going to have to,
your wife is going to beat you with a switch. Don't get off.
Yes. Yeah, she is literally like, what are you doing? Let's go now. So I'm going to have to go do what my wife says.
All right. We'll see you later. Honest. And, okay. And your wife. Good to see you all.
All right. Bye.
He can submit to his wife, but not to God.
Yep.
It would be easier to just submit to God.
Yeah, it would be.
Like, much easier.
Dude.
I understand how you feel, Nate. Like, I think the weakness of the transcendental argument is that it's kind of hard for people to grasp. It's really, like, abstract. And so that is its one weakness. But aside from that, I think it's pretty devastating, especially versus a non-believer.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, there's pleasantly two things, disagree. Right? Like, Well, there's two things. I mean, one is, if you just come in guns blazing, like, you're all dumb. I'm going to tell you how dumb you are. Wait, this thing I'm supposed to educate you about, I don't know really what I'm talking about. I mean, that's one category, which Random was talking about. But then the other one. Yeah, and it's not that it's so difficult to understand, right? Because if you just read a paper on it by someone using very intellectual language, yeah, good luck. It's very difficult to understand at a glance. But I mean, you know, if someone like you or Chris or I don't know, someone that really deals in this world and you explain it a lot, then, well, I don't know. Let's put it to the test now. E-bike. So, you know, tell me the points I need to know in this discussion like I'm a five-year-old. And if you can do that, well, then it's easy for anyone to participate because you are schooled enough in what you're trying to educate other people about that you can dumb it down so anyone can understand it. And then we can all participate. So
See, I'm not there. So I'm still reading precept stuff. So I'm not there yet. Like I would not take on like a debate about precept with anybody simply because I just don't know the material enough.
Oh, well, never mind. But that's the point, right? I forget the, I forget the big term. I can explain it in lay terms, but I forget the big term for what that is and what field that's even in. I think Michael brought it up the other day. It's like basically, the specific thing, like how, if you're like a master in a field, you can dumb that down and explain it in a way that lay people can understand it. Whatever that is.
Yeah, that's like what Neil deGrasse Tyson does. They're called communicate, like a science communicator is a term they use.
Yeah, that wasn't the one I was thinking of, but I mean, maybe. But yeah, basically that's the idea. So like, it's not like, oh, you're so dumb, you can't understand this. Oh, that means my argument's right. It's like, no, if you're as smart as you think you are, you can explain your argument in very simple terms. So then everyone can participate. Even if we don't have like the full, you know, scholarly education and language, you can give that to us. And if you can't, maybe you're not as much of an expert as you think you are. That's the idea.
You ever notice this phenomenon or like if someone were to get up on stage and they just use a bunch of like fancy big words? Yeah. And like people don't really know what they're saying because of the words they're using. They will just assume, well, I don't know. I don't understand what he's saying. He must be way smarter than me.
You mean like Chris?
He just says, read a book.
No, I know the words I use. I'm trying not to use big words.
Like it intimidates people to think, like make you think you're so smart. I don't. So I think like people will do that intentionally to try and like,
to win an argument.
Image. Oh yeah. Yeah, that was William F. Buckley did that, and there's a really embarrassing video for William F. Buckley where he takes on Noam Chomsky, and Noam Chomsky was just as well read and bright as Buckley, and Buckley tried his language stuff with Noam Chomsky, and Noam Chomsky just handed him his butt. Like, I mean, it was bad. I mean, it just showed like he destroyed Buckley. I mean, destroyed Buckley.
Isn't he a linguist?
He's a linguist. and what Buckley was trying to like intimidate him with language, and it's like, bro, the one dude on the planet you're not gonna intimidate with language is absolutely gonna be Noam Chomsky. I mean, Noam Chomsky's got really stupid ideas, don't get me wrong, but like Buckley never really traded in ideas. He traded in intimidation and rhetoric. And so he would win on intimidation and rhetoric all the time. And when he tried it with Chomsky and he had to actually argue an argument, he got killed.
See, I think Chris does this with me every time he like brings up some like old theologian, because he's like, oh, Nate's not going to have any idea who this guy is. So he's going to concede the point.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, if I'm ever saying something and you don't know what I'm talking about, stop me and be like, hey, man.
And he'll tell you what book to read.
No, I'll tell you what it means. Like, just tell me, you know, if I say something like, I mean, you probably know this, but like if I say hypostatic union and I just gloss over it and you're like, wait, what is that? And you genuinely don't know, like stop me and say, hey, man, you just use this term, hypo something. Can you explain that? Like, and then I'll explain it. So like, because we want you to learn stuff. We don't want you to just be bamboozled all the time.
And to be fair, yeah, right? Like some of it just comes with the jargon, right? So if you're talking about religion or philosophy or science, like there's some words that you're just going to get. It's just the way it goes. Cause I mean, you're all talking about the same stuff. So then if you find someone else who's new, it may sound like someone's trying to be an arrogant, you know, jerk or whatever, but it's just because there are certain words like the Trinity, right? And it's like, wait, I don't really understand the Trinity. What is that word for someone's brand new? And it's like, oh, it's like 18, you know, million years of theology boiled down to one term. So if we just say that term, everyone in the discussion regularly, it's a way to bypass like explaining arduously every single time. So I mean, I get that, but yeah, like Chris said, like hypothetical union, right? How is Jesus God and man at the same time? Yeah, so some things will just be jargon. So yeah, I guess I agree with Chris. A lot random.
I was going to say, ask questions. Like when people use and kind of like bluster you with kind of fancy language, it's not necessarily the case that they don't know what they're talking about, but it is kind of like a little bit of a check to make sure that they do know what they're talking about, because there's a difference between having knowledge in your brain, knowing that those words are meaningful, and having an understanding of what all of it is. Like that's kind of why I questioned Honest the way that I did, is like, I don't have an in-depth like encyclopedic knowledge of what transcendental or the transcendental argumentation, especially in this context, is, but like I have a like a solid foundation as to an understanding of kind of the concept of where it comes from. And so like there's a difference, as I said, between understanding and just knowing that those words have thematic significance.
And you know what, I mean, I've got it pulled up on AI. I just heard like what, three people explain it, probably 10 times in the last 20 minutes. If someone's like, "Hey, tell me what transcendental is," I don't even think I can right now. It means beyond, like beyond human understanding, or something not the norm, beyond human reasoning, right? Like that's the best I can do. And I've just heard the explanation like three times at least in the last 10 minutes, as well as I've read it multiple times in the last 20 minutes. And that's the best I got. It's like outside or above or different. It transcends human knowledge or reasoning.
It has a specific meaning in the context of a precept argument.
Yeah. See, and I already failed. And that's just the point, right? It doesn't mean people like haven't known, or they're so ignorant, or they're new to the party. Like I sit through this stuff every day and I can barely regurgitate it. I have to like constantly refresh myself all the time. And I guess, you know, if it's something like near and dear to your heart, you have a better propensity to remember it.
I have to take notes. I can't remember anything. I have to take notes, and like it's hard for me to recall things, so I have that issue.
That is not at all what I thought that word meant, but okay, thanks for letting me know.
But you know, if you take it's weird, well, right?
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Like that's like the broad definition of it. But like he was saying, like it's got more specific nuance in the presuppositional argument. What do you think?
If you want to begin understanding that transcendental thing, my suggestion, at least for me, when I began to help understand that, is kind of getting at the, my brain just left me, the kind of argument from or for transcendental facts. And so, do transcendental facts exist? And kind of get an example of a transcendental fact, and then just kind of stem from there. So you start small, like little baby steps as to kind of that process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, my brain's already melting out of my ears.
sorry, Nate. I don't have a problem with calling out my fellow atheists. Like some of them are just insufferable.
Well, anyone else got anything else? I've got like maybe till the end of this Fortnite match, maybe like 5 minutes, and then I've got to get on with my day.
Are you non-denominational?
Non-denominational? Yeah. In the purest sense of the word, yes.
I had a question from earlier that I didn't get to ask.
Yeah, go ahead.
The genealogies, is there any like extra biblical reference to those kind of verification of those genealogies, or all we have is just the genealogies from the Gospels?
I don't know. I mean, my first just thought would be if there was no, I would say the Talmud, but why would they be in the Talmud? No, as far as I'm aware, Chris, I don't know. I would think the Gospels are the only place you would have those from, except keep in mind the fact that they're represented in the Gospels. I mean, it goes back to reportedly the first person ever created. So, right, like do both genealogies go back to Adam, or anyways, but the idea is they go back all the way through the Israelite times, the ancient times. So records were surely kept in order to get them to the point where they were written down in the New Testament. But I think the only place you're going to find them now is going to be the New Testament.
Doesn't all genealogies go back to Adam?
Well, yeah, but I mean specifically the one about Jesus in the Bible.
Right, some genealogies will start with other characters rather than just Adam.
Yeah, so that was why I was saying, like, one goes all the way back to Adam. I'm like, sure, right? But do both, like Mary and Joseph genealogies in the New Testament start with Adam, or do they start, like, halfway through?
Wouldn't they have to?
Well, no, I mean, of course they do, but are they recorded to, right? Like, does it start with, like, David, for example? I mean, I know it doesn't, but, like, for example, does it start with David, or does it start with, like, Adam? Anyone get what I'm saying?
Well, I know God promised Eve that her she would carry the Messiah to defeat death.
So there you go, Random. The best we've got is probably the New Testament. It's the only place you're going to find it. That's all I'm aware of.
Okay. That was my question.
Adam, that's funny. In chat.
Yeah, I like that joke.
Well.
What's funny is you all think it's a joke.
Or you can say, God is okay with transcendental. That's bad.
Oh, we'll be here all week. Oh, it's the end of the week. Oh, yeah, it's Friday. Hey, we did pretty good. Usually Fridays are just like complete nonsense, but today was pretty good, I think. Anyone have big weekend plans?
The best part was that guy who just said the N-word over and over again. That was my favorite part.
That's the second day. You think I'd like learn who he is by now. But, yeah, until otherwise noted, I'm going to say he's got to be an atheist.
He was actually in the chat talking about, like, how Christianity is false. So, he's at least
Christian. I didn't read what he wrote in chat. I just heard him, you know, yell
he's talking about over and over. Astrotheology. Have you ever heard that idea? That, like, Jesus represents the sun as in the solar system sun? And then, like, the 12 apostles are the 12 signs of the zodiac and all this nonsense.
Oh, that's stupid. Why, people? Come on. Like, isn't it easier just to believe, like, Jesus created stuff and he can save you? Is that not
it's
just easier?
It's, like, the whole thing, man. They go, because, like, the sun will walk on water because it reflects off the water and it looks like the sun's on the water or something like that. Like, all this stuff, too.
I think the problem of it is, Nate, is that it's so simple. The Christian life, how to become a Christian, all that is so simple. And we cloud it up with all of this information and this knowledge and all this stuff that we tend to forget about the simple things. You know, we get so wrapped up in knowledge and what we perceive as truth and all of that stuff. And I'm not saying education is bad, education is wrong, but we let it cloud how simple it really is to not only come to know Christ, but to be a Christian and to believe everything that is being, you know, said to you in scripture and stuff like that. And we get away from it.
I agree. I think that's why so many times people come in and just hear Christians arguing. And like we said yesterday, like it's rarely about salvation issues, because typically if someone walks into a discussion, those are already worked out. So if it's like the few disagreements about salvation stuff, those are usually few and far between, and they're short-lived, because it's like, all right, you're complete heretics, we can't talk. So most of the time when they come in, it's like everyone already agrees on the salvation issues, and then it's like, well, what else do we disagree on? Or what else do we agree on? And then they find some, like, further down the road, a point of disagreement, and then that's what they battle at, and it gets really vicious, because they're like, oh, yeah, Jesus, he's great, it's so easy. Let's talk about, you know, some other nonsense that doesn't matter. But Mole, what is it, like 6 a.m. where you are? I've got like a minute and a half. So you get the last word. What's up, Mole?
It's 8:30 where I'm at here. But good tip for you. If you have leftover tater tots, you fry those up with some sausage that's already cooked and throw in some eggs and cheese. Holy moly.
That
you got a breakfast.
Sounds pretty
buddy.
Good. It was real good. I was thinking about chili cheese tater tots for dinner one night this week.
Ooh.
You know what would make it good. Even, you know what would even take it to the next level, Mole? Throw
what?
Some sausage gravy on top of that. Oh, now you're talking.
We don't do sausage gravy in Colorado.
Wait, you're in Colorado? I used to be in Colorado.
Yeah. We'll do green chili. I'll do green chili with some sausage in it or some pork in it.
You know what the greatest thing was? I mean, this is awful health advice, but when you go to Waffle House, so, you know, we'll just start there. When you go to Waffle House at like 3 a.m. and you get the hash browns, and you know how they have like the whole menu and it's like smothered, covered, blah, blah, blah. Like if you get everything, they usually stop and say, wait, did you want chili or gravy? And it's like both. You won't be disappointed. I did that once and I'm like, I'm so hungry. Just all of it. They're like, really? Chili and gravy? I did that. And now every time, which I haven't been to Waffle House like 15 years, but if I ever go again, that's what I'm getting. Like for a while, that was my thing. So Waffle House all the way, including chili and gravy. I mean,
it's
awful
funny.
For your health. Great for your taste buds.
I mean, like
it's
waffles?
Funny how you say that. Because
no, Waffle House is the restaurant. Hash browns is what you get.
Yeah.
Oh, you put the chili and the gravy on the hash browns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. They do like if you do like and all the way,
else.
It's like yeah, it's
onions,
like
cheese,
onions, cheese, tomatoes, all this stuff, diced ham, and then they top it with chili and the gravy.
That sounds.
And then after you eat all that, then you become the perfect representation of the commercial for Pesto Bismol.
All right, guys. It was fun. Have an awesome weekend. We will catch
I'm
you all later.
God bless you.
And Francis, take on us out to the woodshed for us. See you guys later. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Later, Nate.